We're back with Alexandra Fuller here on the Paula Gordon Show. I'm Paula. Bill Russell.
I grew up in Alabama where strip mining was a very popular thing to do. And what reminded me of it is that corridor you talked about, because when they were strip mining, at least in the latter days, at one point they didn't care and they just did what they wanted to. But there was a point where they started being polite and hiring PR organizations. And they would always leave a barrier of trees in Alabama, pine trees. Between us, between the roads or the towns, and the just incredible devastation that was going on.
Don't you think that's what we do as a nation? We put view corridors between us and what's really happening.
That's an interesting metaphor, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember the city of Chicago in 1968, where view corridors were created by putting up fences around anything that you didn't want people coming to town to see. And then, of course, there were the police riots that followed. So this metaphor can go in a lot of ways.
Well, isn't Botox a view corridor between the world and whatever you're planning to...
I think you're onto something here, writer.
My job is connection, and maybe to an overextent, but it was hot. I spent many, many hours out on that oil patch putting together all these dots. You know, climate change, energy, the lies we tell ourselves in order so that we can just keep consuming, and the lies are absolutely necessary or we would come to pieces. The desperation that I felt, and then into my desperation walked Colton H. Bryant with those startling blue eyes and a heart the size of all of Wyoming and Mustang-taming ways. And an extraordinary thing happened. I came from all this fear and judgment and my liberal high horse, and I sort of got onto this lowly donkey of love, basically. I fell in love with a roughneck, dead roughneck. With his family, with his children, with this exuberance he had for life, with the way that he embraced Wyoming, with his passion for land, with the way that he understood land, with the way that he understood that he was going to leave the world with the same unseemly haste with which he came into it.
There is joy in the way you tell this guy's story. Along with, and you warned me at the beginning of the book, it's going to be death. It's going to, there's this bad stuff coming, and it's full of life. And if anything, the fact that you are able to put faces on these roughnecks that make them real. And maybe you couldn't even have made him so real if he'd still been alive.
You know, I think that's why he became the legend of Colton H. Bryant to me. First of all, his family and his best friend and his sisters and everyone who survived him, his wife, are not diary-keeping, psychologist-attending, navel-gazing people. No one was sort of standing around with a tape recorder under Colton's mouth while he was alive. They would do extremely funny and extremely accurate reenactions of Colton. They would walk like him and talk like him, and I really sort of managed to get his language and his soul, I think, fairly nailed down. But he became, for me, the more I got into his story, the priorities of our age, and he was really the sort of sacrificial person for that. At one point, I very deliberately show him on the back of his Mustang that he got off the Red Desert, who he called Coco.
This is a real Mustang. This is a
real Mustang.
Car.
She still lives with Colton's parents, actually. I've touched, fed, and felt this horse. It's sort of an amazing connection back to Colton, who only died 2 years ago. I mean, we're not talking ancient history here, even though sometimes writing about Colton and his priorities, not our priorities, his priorities, he felt very 19th century to me.
His
the guns
priorities.
And the hunting and that kind of thing. But, you know, there's a moment in the book that I talk about Colton and his father, Bill, going on a cattle drive. And when I asked Bill Bryant about going on a cattle drive, I said, Bill's a man of extraordinarily few words. So, Bill, what did you do when you went on a cattle drive? Long silence, like he was really mulling that over, and he finally said, move cows. And I said, okay, do you want to say any more about that? I said, anything else to be said about that? He said, not really. So I had to phone up another cowboy friend of mine, and I said, are you moving cows anytime soon? He said, yep. I said, can I move cows with you? Yep. Cowboys will never over-explain, so they didn't, you know, pre-warn me, do not come and move cows on a full-blood Arabian mare, which is what I own.
Oh, dear.
After a day of some quite exciting riding over badger holes, I said to my cowboy friend, you know, I've noticed I'm the only one riding a mare. And he said, yep. But I had to reimagine Colton on a cattle drive. So I went on cattle drives to sort of really get a sense of what it felt like, smelt like, was like. And I had an image at one point I was riding with young cowboys, and they're all larking about, of Colton doing, at some point on every cattle drive, some cowboy's going to put the reins in his mouth and fling his arms up in the air and act like a cowboy that's been shot. And I thought, that's Colton. And like a Jesus with his arms flung up. And I never use words lightly, but I did not choose that word lightly. I did not mean for it to be blasphemous. I meant for it to be deeply telling.
I was reminded of your father as I read about Bill.
The same man.
Didn't that make it easier that you
so
know
much
this
easier.
Character already?
Absolutely. The same way, Bill Bryan, like my father, thinks that 90% of what people say is just noise pollution.
Phil, does that sound right?
Well, that's true. All you got to do is turn on the TV.
Yeah. And so, rather like my father, Bill Bryan's always sitting back a little bit and not... What you say is maybe a tenth of what he's understanding. He is looking right through you to see what color your soul is. And if you kind of wish you'd done your laundry and put your dishes away and cleaned up your act before you go and see Bill Bryan, you don't feel judged, but you do feel deeply understood.
You were kind enough to send an early draft of this that I read. And then I went back and read the final version. The first time I went through it, there was this phrase, cowboy up, that I found.
That is a verb, to cowboy up.
Cupcake,
yes, which is the vocative form of the form of address. And the first time I read it, I thought, well, that's cute. I like that. In fact, I sort of wondered why you hadn't called the book that. And then I realized that there was actually a more... That had drifted through the culture, through the drugstore cowboys, as well as through the
Kmart cowboys too.
The Kmart cowboys, Walmart cowboys. So it had been diminished. But I found the second time I read it, you know, with the full weight of the tragedy in mind, that it, in a way, it is. It sounds like, or what I was hearing, seeing, was an acknowledgement that I know I'm going to get shit from the world around me, and I'm just going to have to live with it. It wasn't as romantic as it was the first time through. It, in a way, and I say this because I have this sense of deep exploitation, not only of the land, but of the people. I
mean, and people, the two are connected.
Exactly.
I mean, in Wyoming still, unlike much of the rest of the United States, people and land are the same thing. If you were to take away the land, as is happening very, very quickly, you take away the people. James Galvin, who is one of my favorite writers, he wrote a book called The Meadow, which might be the best book ever committed to English. But it's certainly the best book.
She likes it.
I like it. It's certainly the best book written about the West that I know of. And he says, a lot of people lost their lives in the Depression. If life was what you did, something like that. I felt the same about the boom. A lot of people are losing their lives in this boom. If life is what you do, if you are someone who is attached to the land, who hunts and traps and is a ranch hand, and who is not there for the pay. I mean, these people are not there for the money. You're certainly not there for the weather. You're there because you cannot escape that brutally beautiful land.
The land that you write about, you can never, ever, ever, through the course of the story, get away from it. It is so integral to who these people are. And it was a sense, and you do that, of course, with your other work when you're talking about Africa, when you're talking about any of your luminous stories. In a way, it invited me back to the kind of animal that we are, mm. from which we are so distanced.
Well, there is no accident that before I wrote this book, I read Elizabeth Marshall Thomas' brilliant, brilliant book, The Old Way, which I think is deeply important. Last look back at who we were before we go forward. And not only a brilliant, brilliant book about a last look back, but a dire warning about what is going to happen to us if we don't look back and accept that we are animals. That the fear that we're living in now is really affecting our decision-making, and we're making a lot of poor decisions based on the fear-mongering that is
devastating
happening.
Devastating decisions. Devastating. The depth of a devastation somehow doesn't come out of any of the reporting, but comes out of the literary reportage. The devastation is just unbelievable until you can put a face on it and wrap a legend around it.
Well, and look at, I mean, one of the things that struck me sort of following Colton and writing about him was he had written a life worthy of legend. Here was a boy who grew up being teased, who raced around Evanston on his bicycle.
This would be Evanston, Wyoming.
Evanston in southwest Wyoming, as opposed to Evanston, Illinois, thank you. At the age of 16, like his brother before him and his father before that, he's given his own wild Mustang off the Red Desert, wild horse, to which he must pit himself.
And the kid's ADD.
The kid has ADHD. And I'm coincidentally doing a story on wild horses for another magazine. And I'm learning that a wild horse will reflect you back at yourself perfectly. Not like a domestic horse that has been separated and sort of is dysfunctional because it hasn't had, you know, the life that it needs to be a proper horse.
Well, it's separated from its nature.
From its nature. So Coco reflects Colton perfectly. She's flighty. She's difficult to catch. Deeply gentle. And in fact, she is who Kaylee, Colton's mother, puts his children on and takes riding now. But so here you have a boy who got his pickup truck stuck in a snowdrift when he was out shooting rabbits. And what does he do? Instead of lie there and die in minus 40, you know, because he's in the middle of the high plains, far away from a road, he flags down the Union Pacific Railway. Here is a boy who had this monumental friendship that I think has been abused in some Western literature lately, but in this story, Jake, the friendship with Jake, that deep connection that these men have reminded me of connections that soldiers have for one another. This understanding that you better look out for each other because this land is the kind of land that could snatch you back from life quite quickly. The wind. Things can turn on you very, very fast. The way that this boy was so romantic and barely knew this woman that he had fallen in love with, found out she wasn't very happy to where she'd moved in Arizona, drove all night to get her, proposed marriage to her, and was married within a month. This boy who threw his heart at an oil rig and paid for it with his life.
This is Alexandra Fuller. If I can keep from crying, we'll be back in just a moment. Please be with us.